Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, March 18th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. The International Monetary Fund says it's not automatic that Harare will get a loan in the third quarter of this year.
That is a decision that has to be made by our executive board. That is not a decision that is made by, the Zimbabwe team.
Zimbabwe starts buying maize from Mexico, Ukraine and other nations in an effort to tackle serious hunger.
We have additional imports coming in, mainly from Beira and also Maputo. We'll be starting the Durban route and the Tanzania route.
And Zimbabweans say people responsible for the alleged looting of diamonds worth $15 billion should be arrested. The International Monetary Fund, or IMF, says it's not automatic that Harare will get a loan in the third quarter of this year, as the determination will be made by the International Lender of Last Resort's Executive Board. Getting fresh money will also depend on Harare settling its $1.8 billion in arrears to the international lenders. In Lima, Peru, last year at the annual IMF World Bank annual meetings, Zimbabwe had set an ambitious target to repay the loan by April. John Mangudia told Reuters that Harare expects to pay arrears by June and thereafter the IMF to resume lending the country money for the first time since 1999. However, skepticism remains on whether the Southern African nation can pay back its debts, as it is presently repaying a paltry $150,000 a month on its $124 million debt to the IMF. Senator Bob Corker, chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, wrote a letter recently to the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury stating that Washington must insist on democratic reforms as per the U.S. laws before endorsing Harare's bid for fresh loans. IMF resident representative in Harare, Christian Bedis, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the debt payment date has remained fluid for Zimbabwe.
This was always like a fluid target. These things are not written in stone. And, they hope they will do it by June, and that's fine. I mean, if they can do it, that's good. It might be a bit later. What I said last time when we had the interview not too long ago before the mission came, I said, sometime in the second half of the year. And I think that's a realistic assumption. But of course, if they want to pay back the IMF arrears, they could do this tomorrow if they wanted to.
Zimbabwe is also saying it is expecting a loan from the IMF in the third quarter of this year. Can you comment on that?
That is a decision that has to be made by our executive board. That is not a decision that is made by, the Zimbabwe team, or by our management for that matter. Our management decides whether something is sent to the board, but the ultimate decision rests with our executive board.
In your decision, for example, to give Zimbabwe fresh loans, to what extent is it determined by the U.S. government, which has just renewed targeted sanctions against Zimbabwe? And there was a congressman who was saying that America must actually block any new funding to Zimbabwe.
You can go to our external website, imf.org, and find, the quotas and shareholdings of all our board members, basically. And that gives you an idea, what the weight is of our chairs, But I think this is really not something I can comment on, actually, because, this is up to each of our shareholders, to decide what they want to do and what they can do.
That was IMF resident representative in Harare, Christian Bedis, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu on the line from Harare. Zimbabwe Millers Association Chairman Tafadzwa Musarara says his association has managed to secure maize to feed the nation for the next 2.5 months while they wait for more consignments to reach the country. Musarara says they are now buying the scarce commodity from countries like Mexico, Ukraine and Uruguay after Zambia and South Africa stopped selling maize to other nations. Though he could not disclose how much the millers are paying for a ton of maize, Musarara assured the consumers that there won't be any price increases of the staple food maize mill. He tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that they are expecting the first consignment of 90,000 tons through the port of Beira in the next few weeks.
The maize situation has improved. We have moved from 6 weeks cover that we had in January to 2.5 months cover, which means that we now have enough maize to feed the country for the next 2.5. However, we have additional imports coming in, mainly from Beira and also Maputo. We'll be starting the Durban route and the Tanzania route. So we are doing everything possible to open as many frontiers as we can to ensure that we have as much non-GMO white maize getting to the country to sustain our food security.
Some would think that it's costly for you to buy from these faraway countries. How are you going to recover the cost? Is it not going to be passed on to the consumers?
I think it's a wrong perception that the maize from gypsies is more expensive than here. You should appreciate the fact that already Zimbabwe has the highest price of maize in the whole world. And we are buying this maize at a very low price, using the cheapest mode of transport, which is sea, and then we rail it to Harare. So we don't expect any phenomenal increase in the price of millet. The price is likely to stabilize, and we also want to capitalize on volume.
How much are you paying for a ton?
I can't disclose that at the moment, but all I can tell you is that the price of millet is not going to change.
That was Tafadzwa Musarara, chairman of the Zimbabwe Millers Association, speaking there with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri. A High Court judge in Bulawayo today reserved judgment in a matter in which former Senator Matson Hlalo, an expelled member of Morgan Tsvangirai's Movement for Democratic Change, is challenging his expulsion from the party and the Senate. Our correspondent Taurai Shava brings us more from Bulawayo.
High Court Judge Justice Noctula Moyo said she would make a ruling at a later date in the case in which Hlalo filed an urgent chamber application seeking to have the court set aside his recent recall from the Senate as well as his dismissal from the party. Hlalo is also seeking an interim order to stop the MDCT from appointing another person as a senator until the matter is finalized. Asked how confident he is in having the court rule in his favor in a matter that is between him and his political party, Hlalo, who is being represented by Attorney Godfrey Nyoni, said he had been compelled to approach the courts as a last resort because he felt the MDCT had failed to follow the dictates of justice, one of the principles that the party espouses. He said his dismissal from both the party and the Senate was not procedural as the MDCT's constitution had not been properly followed.
The whole issue about why we are at this court is to show the world that people must stand up for their rights, irrespective of who trashes them. As they say, charity begins at home. If people are not able to stand up against their party on cases of injustices, and then you say you are going to fight against injustice in national politics, then you are saying the wrong things.
But the MDCT Secretary General, Douglas Monzora, who is representing the party, said the party has clearly laid down procedures that are meant to address members' grievances. He said the MDCT decided to expel him as he had chosen not to follow the regulations, adding that Hlalo's case has no merit as the party followed some provisions of its constitution to expel him and recall him from Senate.
There is absolutely no case as far as we are concerned, and there are a lot of decided cases on this issue. The case of Abednego Bebe and the three of his colleagues versus Welshman was decided in 2009 by the courts in favor of what we are doing. The case of Tendai Biti and others was decided again in favor of what we are saying. The case of Baskiti, Temba Mliswa and so on. Once a political party has dismissed an elected person, that person must lose their seat.
Hlalo's clash with the MDCT emanates from his refusal to accept the election of Gift Banda as the party's chairperson for Bulawayo province. Hlalo argued that the internal vote in which Banda was elected in 2014 was marred by violence. His fight over Banda's election is still in the courts. Reporting for Studio 7 from Lawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
Zimbabweans generally agree that people responsible for the alleged looting of diamonds worth $15 billion should be arrested regardless of their political affiliation. ZANU-PF's London-based Nick Mangwana and George Mkwananzi of the People's Democratic Party are among Zimbabweans calling for the punishment of those that looted diamond proceeds. They say it's worrying that the country lost billions of dollars in potential revenue at a time Zimbabwe needed a huge financial injection to revive the ailing economy. President Robert Mugabe claimed recently that the government only received $2 billion of the estimated $15 billion that may have been generated from diamond sales in Zimbabwe's Manicaland province. Mkwananzi claims that the money was allegedly used to finance ZANU-PF's previous election campaigns. But Mangwana argues that this is impossible, as the alleged looting of the gems may have mostly happened when Zimbabwe had a government of national unity.
Are you saying the ZANU-PF campaign cost $15 billion? That would be nonsensical, of course. Then comes the issue of collective responsibility. The cabinet said every Tuesday. So it's everybody's responsibility. This speculation that this security or that one doesn't did that, it's speculation. It's really political grandstanding. It has nothing to do with the facts on the ground. The facts on the ground is the country experienced some grand theft of its resources. And everybody should be focused on recovering that. Everybody should be focused on getting the people, and the government should be focused on getting the people that committed this grand theft to account, and also to face justice. I think that's what everybody should be focused on. Whether it be the Chinese or not, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But from the president's interview, he indicated that it was bad deals that were made, and the Chinese did that. And we also have got recent reportage that the Anjin, for example, didn't have a real agreement with the government or contract with the government. That shows, obviously, a bit of ineptitude from somebody somewhere or from the cabinet of the day. So that's how it is. We cannot try to split hairs and remove this from responsibility and remove that from responsibility. Everybody was responsible. The country lost revenue. Let's try to recover that if we can. That's number one. Number two, it's not like the money was the $15 billion was a heap somewhere when somebody started, somebody picked up that heap, put it on a truck and went with it. No, this man, as I'm using the word pilfer, it basically means it was leaking. It is a massive leakage. So recovering it will be extremely difficult. We hope it will be recovered. I do hope personally that it will be recovered. But I'm also not holding my breath because I know that it's not going to be easy. Let's be pragmatic. What I want, if you ask me, I want to see people that showed ineptitude, the technocrats that were supposed to be doing these deals, the directors who represented the government in these companies, either arrested or fired or facing the consequences or facing an inquiry where we actually can all interrogate what actually happened. That's all we need to know, what happened and how can we recover that. This issue of throwing mud all around, slinging it all over the place, does not work. It won't take us anyway. Because what it does is forces the government, forces everybody to close things, not to be transparent. Let's all be very honest. Let's all do self-examination. Let's stop politicking. Let's focus on what's happening. We need our money back. It's a lot of money.
Mr. Mkwananzi?
We attempted to blame the entire government of ZANU-PF. It's not like this thing is just emerging now. During that time when enough money wasn't trickling into the government coffers via the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Finance then did raise a flag that we are not getting enough from Chiatwa. What's happening? If the president, who is now raising the issue now, was alert and not sleeping like he does every time, he should have acted then. They should have been able to nip this in the bud, acted on the call by the Minister of Finance then that the money from the diamonds proceeds wasn't tricking into the ministry's coffers. So if really they are to be absolved from this thing, let the president set a commission in place or audit whatever processes would be the best to not just to recover, but to find out who did what. Because I believe the leakages that Comrade Mangwana is referring to were deliberately created so that then somebody was going to benefit, including those that are in ZANU-PF. So they should not leave any stone unturned. Let them find out, you know, comb through the entire structures of, you know, the diamond process up to the end, A up to Z, and find out who did what, who did not do what. Because some people committed the crime by actually the way of commission, others by way of not doing it. So let's see who did what, and we shall observe or absolve those that did not do it.
And that was George Mkwananzi, deputy spokesperson of the People's Democratic Party. You also heard from Nick Mangwana, ZANU-PF provincial chairperson in London. Both spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube.